And welcome to another edition of Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And, all right, we've covered New Wave with Pet Shop Boys. We've done some punk with the Ramones. And now let's move to folk or folk music. Do you like, pronounce the L when you say folk music?
Now I'm going to be thinking folk. About it.
I know. It's when it's like, don't think about breathing, you can do is think about your breathing.
I think I do have the L that comes in there. Not hard L. It's more like a passive
right.
L.
Yes. So folk.
Yeah, kind of like the way Scott says both.
Both. Yeah, okay. Sure. Gotcha. So folk music, and I'm probably going to say it both ways, so that way everybody's happy.
But you have to be careful, because if you get too far off the L, it starts sounding like you're mispronouncing what you eat with.
Right, a folk. Give me a spoon and a folk. Crosby, Stills, Nash, and sometimes Young. Which, here's the thing. I mean, love these guys. But boy, it makes it really difficult to go through their discography in like Spotify or Apple Music when in alternating albums, sometimes it's with Young, sometimes it's without Young. So you've got to be like, okay, now I got to search for a different artist and do that album. Okay, now I got to search for a different artist to do the next album.
And it's not just that, too. It's that they had such a hiatus there in the middle, and they all released solo albums to varying degrees of success and failure, and they worked together as duos and different configurations, and it's messy after about 74.
It is, yeah, as far as where you go, yeah, to listen. So Crosby, Stills, Nash, Young, Graham Nash, Stephen Stills, Neil Young, of course, and is it David Crosby? David Crosby.
Yeah, David Crosby.
Not Bing. No. different Crosby.
You don't search with this Crosby.
That's right. Yeah. Oh, jeez. And all of them coming from other bands, like Stephen Stills coming from Manassas and Buffalo Springfield, Graham Nash coming from the Hollies, David Crosby coming from the Byrds, and Neil Young kind of stopping by whenever he's in town, kind of thing.
Well, but also, like, he was part of Buffalo Springfield too.
Oh, he was, right. Yeah. True. Yeah. A great collector set, Four-Way Street of Buffalo Springfield. Really good stuff. They were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and each of the three, sans Young, were inducted with each of their other bands, Byrds, Buffalo Springfield, and the Hollies. Neil Young was inducted for his solo work and his work with Buffalo Springfield, but not Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young. So they were inducted as Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
And this is just the beginning of the messiness?
I mean, right.
That right there is a defining example of what's about to come.
Yes. And let this be a lesson. If you're out there and starting a band, don't name it after the last names of all of its members, because members come and members go, and all of a sudden you're in a different bin at the record store and people can't find your music.
Actually, that was one of the reasons they actually went with their surnames, is so that if one member left, they couldn't go on.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's in there.
Well, fat lot of good that did. They continued on. They carried on without Neil Young. I guess they started without Neil Young, so they just returned. But maybe that's the thing. Maybe they just shouldn't have added Young to the name of the band when they added Young to the slate. Just let him be, you know, unless he's ready to sign on the dotted line and say, I will be with this band forever.
Yeah. Maybe just, he's like the rap interlude guy that says Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young featuring Neil
featuring
Young.
Yeah. Crosby, Stills, and Nash featuring Young. Yeah. I like it a lot. All right. So, David Crosby, was dismissed from the Byrds in 1967. And in 1968, Buffalo Springfield, early 1968, Buffalo Springfield had fallen apart. So Crosby and Stills started jamming together. And they wrote the song Wooden Ships with Paul Kantner from Jefferson Airplane. You're from the other side. Just one thing I got to know. Can you tell me, please? One. Say, can I have some? At the time, Nash joined them after a party, and they realized that together they had good vocal chemistry and, of course, a very unique style of harmony, which you hear in all those, all their music, even their later stuff. I mean, yeah. that's the thing that really defines Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and Young, featuring Young, is the really, really tight vocal harmonies, which I love. I love the fact that they are so spot on their harmonies.
What I can really see after this last week is why Kevin Gilbert was such a fan of them. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we know he covered Judy Blue Eyes, Sweet Judy Blue Eyes,
yes,
when he was a toy matinee. But when you listen to it, all I kept hearing was hints and memories of Kevin Gilbert, his solo stuff and his toy matinee stuff and all the things he did as I was going through this. And I can totally see how he was a fan of these guys.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Gilbert, because his voice would have fit that almost that same harmony role as Neil Young, and you hear it in Toy Matinee in a couple spots, and then in some of the places on his solo stuff where he does multi-tracking, but the dude knows his harmonies as well, so that's probably a lot of that harmonization is attributed to the influence of CSNY.
Yep. Which sounds like an airplane stop, you know, when you get on your
CSNY.
Yeah.
It's well, like an abbreviation for an airport.
Yeah. Like LAX or whatever.
Oh, I've got to fly from DFW to CSNY. Okay. I think I can hear it now. You might be onto something. I completely lost my train of thought. So we mentioned at the top of the show that, and I didn't know this, that they used their surnames to ensure the band could not go on without one member. Again, I think it's an admirable idea. I don't know. I mean, I guess it does say, hey, you know, without, we can't be Stills and Nash, Stills and Nash and Young or something like that. You know, we can't. But I think that, I don't know. It just feels like you wouldn't want to lock yourself in, concrete yourself in, like that, paint yourself into a corner where the only way you can perform now, if you want to perform with any of these guys, is to perform with all of these guys.
Yeah. And I mean, when you look back at the history of this kind of stuff, there aren't many examples of it being successful. Emerson, Lake and Palmer is one of them. Mm-hmm. But I can't think of too many other bands besides Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young that actually use surnames as part of their group identifier.
Right.
Can you? Well, for more than one album, because Anderson,
I was going to say Bruford, Wakeford, Wakeman, and Howe. Yeah. Yes,
but that's only one album.
Yeah, there's Buckner and Garcia. I know that's a really bad example because all they did was Pac-Man Fever. But there's somebody like that.
Well, there's Bachman like and Turner and Overdrive.
Oh yeah, well Bachman and Turner. Overdrive. Yeah, that's a good example. Shaw Blades.
Yeah, but how many albums did they do?
They've done like four or five.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. I think it's a lot easier too when there's two of you, because again, one of you could drop out and it's like, oh, I'm just going to go do a solo album, right?
Yeah.
But if there's four of you or even three of you, then one of you dropping out and the two of you wanting to do the rest of it, I don't know, it's tough. Now, there was a Crosby and Nash.
Yes,
there was. For one album,
yep,
right?
They did a couple. I know they did a touring tour, and then they did an album, I think. It was a duo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in the notes, I'll let you know, I sometimes drop the S, and so he's Crosby and not Crosby.
Crosby. Nice. I was like, is he a house elf from the Harry Potter series?
Oh, anyway. Mr. Potter gave me a sock.
All right. So, again, lost my place in the notes here.
Managed by Elliot Roberts.
There we go. So the band was managed by Elliot Roberts and David Geffen. Roberts had to deal with all their egos, but kept them focused, while David Geffen was more of the deal guy, arranging tours and scheduling albums and stuff like that. And kind of like, this actually is one of your notes, and I think I'd like you to bring it up because I want to talk about it, because I think it's a very good note.
One of the things that I noticed as I was listening through is very quickly you learn the writing styles of each of the members. And so you can say, oh, that's a Neil Young song, or that's a Nash song, or that's a Crosby song. And right. You become very aware of kind of the voice of the lyricist as well as how the voices work within the song.
Mm-hmm. I totally see that, especially with Graham Nash for more than the others, maybe Neil Young a little bit, but primarily with Graham Nash, there's a very songs from my life kind of feel to his stuff. And so when you're listening to the lyrics, it's like, oh, this is definitely a Graham Nash song. So I can definitely hear that.
It's funny you say that. I actually made the joke that he's the This American Life of songwriters. And that Neil Young is more like a morality play when it comes to songwriting.
Interesting. Okay.
And I couldn't put a finger on the other styles, but I mean, like a cute name. But those two guys, I definitely could pull out and go, oh, that's Neil Young, kind of a voice of warning almost. And that's Graham Nash reflecting on America or Americana.
Yeah. Right. Americana for sure. Yeah. Oh, it's really good. All right, well, let's get into some of their albums. First one was titled, very cleverly, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, released 1969. Two top 40 hit singles came from that, Sweet Judy Blue Eyes, the opening track, and Marrakesh Express. Sweeping cobwebs down the stairs, sweeping cobwebs down the edges of my mind. Get away to see what we could find. Hope the days that lie ahead bring us back to where they've led. Listen not to what's been said to you. Did you discover what the lyrics for Sweet Judy Blue Eyes were at the end?
You mean those, the ending Spanish lyrics?
I did, talking about the oceans of Rio, was it? Is that, if I remember correctly? I went back and looked at that and was looking at what those lyrics meant. Somebody had posted a translation, and it is Spanish. Let me pull them back up.
You mean it's not about tacos and enchiladas and
it is
in stuffed words?
It is not. Okay, so yeah, it's all during that. All right, here it is. How happy it is to make me think of Cuba, the smiles of the Caribbean Sea. Sunny sky has no blood, and how sad that I'm not able to go. Oh, go, oh, go, go.
So this must be them lamenting the embargoes against Cuba?
I guess, yeah, right? That they can't travel to Cuba,
yeah,
perhaps?
That seems like it's all of a sudden it got very political.
Geez, and that didn't seem like a song that was very political, right? It was like more of self-awareness and awareness of how your partner sees you or your partners, right? Yeah. But then you do kind of get that, right, like they're, let's throw a little protest about not being able to tour in Cuba because of the embargo. That's interesting. Okay. I didn't think about that. Marrakesh Express, that also feels like a Graham Nash song for sure.
Oh, yeah.
It's got that kind of fun, liltiness in there. Cass Elliot from the Mamas and the Papas makes a cameo on this album as a backing vocalist. Just looking to see if there's any other notable performers. No. All right.
Neil Young joined just after this release as a full partner, but he still had Crazy Horse as his main gig.
as his big project. Yeah. Right.
And then Joni Mitchell was her opening act for their very, very first show. Mm-hmm. And who in their right mind would have their second gig ever be Woodstock?
Right. It's a lot of weight to put on a brand new band.
All of them had experience, but as a brand new group working together, no mm-hmm. matter how much experience you have, your second gig is Woodstock is a leap of faith that I might not be comfortable taking.
Right. But I think if you knew, I mean, I guess at the time there wasn't anything like Woodstock before Woodstock, right? At least, you know, now we've got, well, there's Coachella and there's Lollapalooza and there's Bumbershoot Festival and there's, you know, there's all these things like that. And so you kind of know what to expect. These guys were going into Woodstock, not really knowing, all right, it's going to be a concert that they're putting on in a farm, like Yazger's farm. And so they probably weren't thinking it was going to be the huge thing that it turned into. It turned out to be.
It is interesting in the movie, though, right before they start, he does make one of them makes a comment about, hey, this is our second gig. Be kind.
Mm-hmm. Right. People are like, what? This is awesome. she was, Joni Mitchell dated Graham Nash, was dating him at the time. And actually the story of Our House is taken right from the two of them living together. Woodstock was written by Joni Mitchell and they performed it at, or no, she performed it. See, I'm getting the story wrong again because it got me all confused. I want to make sure I get this right. So 1 second here. So Graham Nash came back from Woodstock describing it. She was going to go, but she got invited to appear on the Dick Cavett show. So she did that instead. Graham Nash gets back. He's describing what it was like to her, and she writes the song Woodstock, and she releases on her album. She actually does it at the Big Sur Folk Festival, which is after Woodstock. And then she releases it on her Ladies of the Canyon album. And then that same month, actually, March 1970, Crosby, Stills, and Nash included it on their Deja Vu album. And a very, very different version. A great, great example of covers that don't have to sound just like the original. Hers is slow and wistful and, you know, almost like, hey, I wish I was there kind of thing, but describing the scene, but it's almost delivered in a style like, oh man, wish I was there. Whereas theirs were like, oh, this, you know, rockin' festival and everybody's rolling around the mud. And boy, wouldn't it be great if they do this in 30 years and call it Woodstock 1999 and
and have Blues Traveler play.
Right, and the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Yeah. So they released that as their first single from the album. Teach Your Children, Our House, and Carry On, also singles released from Deja Vu.
Deja Vu is such a great album.
It is. It really is a solid album. Almost Cut My Hair on there, Helpless, which I always thought it is a Neil Young written song, but I always thought it was just a Neil Young song. Didn't realize it was Neil Young with Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
Dream, comfort, memory, despair. And in my mind, I still need a place to go. All my changes were there.
4 and 20, Country Girl, a lot of great stuff on this album.
Yeah, they This is where Ohio comes in.
That's right. It was after, because they didn't include the song on Deja Vu.
It's on there.
Not on the original.
Oh, not on the original
release.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
The original release didn't have it. They must have added it afterwards. I'm pulling up the next album because I want to make sure. They did include it on So Far, which was their greatest hits album that they released after their two albums and a live album.
Yeah, nothing like having a retrospective after two albums and a live one.
Right, exactly.
But I'm glad they did that because So Far was one of the cassettes that I listened to ad nauseum when I was in third and fourth grade. That was one.
Really?
When we were first stationed over in Germany, my dad was in Germany. He picked that up, Abba Voulez-Vous, and I want to say there was the Edgar Winter album that had Frankenstein. On it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
And I listened to those three cassettes over and over again. And so when I started listening to this, I had all these weird sense memories of being in third grade in Germany.
Oh, wow.
And so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their fathers have.
Crazy, huh?
But yeah, Ohio was inspired after the Kent State riots and the subsequent four students that were killed.
Right.
And it's weird. We're listening to this now with the things, some of the current climate that's going on. It kind of, like we joked about it last week, that, you know, protest music will be back in vogue here soon. And I don't think we're that far away.
No, I don't think so either. And we do get some of that. I mean, the song that was recorded for the movie Selma, even though its through line is all the Martin Luther King references, there is a little bit of a current state of, you know, police brutality against African American people and stuff like that that's kind of in there. So, so you're right. I don't think we're far from a resurgence of the protest song or a stronger surge than we're currently seeing.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah. So Ohio was released. There we go. Ohio never got released on an official full studio album. It did get included as part of that greatest hits. And of course it was released as its own single. So the band, and you kind of hear this in that live album that that's recorded after Deja Vu, which is called Four Way Street. You can kind of hear the tension that started rising in the band. They were getting strained by their success. The group kind of imploded after the 1970 tour for Deja Vu. But the four of them, including Young, didn't come back together until 1974 and the 1974 tour. Each of the four during that time period released solo albums. Young would release After the Gold Rush. Stephen Stills released a self-titled album. David Crosby would release If I Could Only Remember My Name, which might as well be a self-titled album, I guess, based on that title.
and also his history of drug abuse.
Right. Yeah. Right. Wow. It covers two bases. And Graham Nash released Songs for Beginners. And then you see Crosby and Nash together. We're performing as Crosby and Nash. They went on an acoustic tour together and wouldn't get released. The music from that tour, the tour video, wouldn't be released until 1998 as part of a documentary called Another Stony Evening. The next year, Neil Young released probably the greatest Neil Young album of all time, which is Harvest. So many great voices and people joining him on that album. Lynn Ronstadt, I think Jackson Brown on that one.
It pretty much was a who's who of Neil Young's friends coming in.
It really was.
I mean, it was amazing.
Yeah. Such a great album. Stephen Stills would join Chris Hillman and form Manassas. I misspoke. I said Manassas was a Stephen Stills project before CSNY, but it was actually during. And Neil Young and Graham Nash released war song to support George McGovern's presidential campaign.
This is just, like I said, it gets super weird as far as tracking who's with who. And
mm-hmm. You need one of those Jack Black on the blackboard during School of Rock diagrams that show the arrows pointing to like who was with who and then who moved over to who. And that sort of thing.
Yeah, it gets crazy. And it just goes to show, though, how talented these guys are, because whatever iteration they decided to get into, they worked. And it seemed as if the magic of them together led to the frustrations, but it also added to the greater part of its sums.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems as if the four of them, personality-wise, just couldn't last more than a short time together. And I don't know if that was one person's fault, or if it was just all of them, or if the addiction rolled into it, or
that certainly didn't help, right? The addiction. And I'm guessing that that there was probably a little bit of, maybe, I don't want to say jealousy, but when you've got that many talents all working on albums together, and song X becomes the single and is hugely popular, and it's, oh well, this is a Graham Nash song, there's probably a natural tendency for the other members to be like, oh, well, you know, Marrakesh Express is huge. Great. Thanks, Graham Nash. And, you know, that's really a hymn song. And where's my part of this? And where, how do I fit in and stuff? So, I mean, you probably don't get that when there's a band where you've got one writer and one, you know, one person kind of putting that stuff together, because then it's the writer and then it's the band performing it is more than these individual pieces that all excelled on their own or in their previous bands and came together to do this.
Well, I think that's why supergroups don't work constantly together. They are supergroups because they get together on occasion.
Mm-hmm.
And that strain isn't quite as apparent because you're getting together once every 5-7 years. You're not getting together daily on a 150-city tour.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Asia is a good example of this, right?
Transatlantic is a great example of it. There are lots of them that are out there. Cream.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right. Yeah. Interesting. Traveling Wilburys, probably if so many of them hadn't passed away, they probably would have.
Yeah, but they wouldn't have been able to fight either, because even at their prime, they'd have broken each other's hips.
True. Oh. All right, so... let's see. Nash and Crosby released a duo album, because they really liked working together. In 1973, they weren't all as successful as they were. Not as good sales all around. Neil Young's album Tonight's the Night was so dark that the record company refused to release it until 1975.
And I don't understand why they picked 2 years to sit on it. What was going on to make it better in 75 than they did in 73?
More disco. And they said, oh, geez, all right, we need something. Please give us something to combat this disco. You know, I joke, but there might be something to that. In 1974, they all got back together again to record a new album. They were going to call it Human Highway, but they just could not get along. And they scattered to the winds, the four winds again. Until a little bit later, they reassembled for an outdoor tour. They released selected songs from that on an album called CSNY in 2014. I thought 2012. Was it 2014?
I got 2014, but it could be 2012.
Oh, no. You know, I'm looking at is CSN 2012, the live album CSN 2012. Okay. So, and then the bickering continued. And
hey, I'm picking up a theme.
Yeah, exactly. They just can't get along. Crosby versus Stills versus Nash versus sometimes featuring Young.
Yep.
So in 1974, they released a compilation, their greatest hits album so far.
Which, that's the place to start, I'll tell you.
It is a good place to start. Well, I don't know. Deja Vu is good on its own. You don't, I don't think you need to jump right to the greatest hits, the first greatest hits album. But it is going to be your first appearance of Ohio. So, I would say start with Deja Vu and then follow up with So Far, because you get the best of CSN and Crosby, Stills, and Nash, the names of those albums. I'm sorry, just Crosby, Stills, and Nash on So Far as well.
Yeah. And I will say, too, that after 74, mm-hmm. they're not as consistent, and they were hard to find things I liked in post 74 Crosby, Stills, Nash, and sometimes Young.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I enjoyed the stuff, the pre 74 stuff, a lot more than the post 74 stuff. The harmonies were all there. The writing was still there, but the fun of it, it didn't seem like they were still having as much fun, and they weren't having as much fun.
Well, they were. It was just not musical fun.
They were having fun with substances.
Yes.
Not fun with each other. Let's see. They, after 1974, so they were still continuing their own directions and recording solo albums and other projects to various degrees of success. But in 1976, Stephen Stills approached David Crosby and Graham Nash to say, "Hey, let's try it one more time, fellas." And so they did, and the result was the CSN album in 1977, their fifth album, their second as a trio, and the first without Neil Young since he joined the band. A couple songs released as singles from this one, a very popular Just a Song Before I Go, another Graham Nash tune.
When we opened up the door, I had to be alone. Stands before my eyes, driving me to the airport and to the
Fair Game, which was a Stephen Stills written song.
So this story, this album, makes me think that maybe Young is the culprit for their problems.
You think? Like every time Neil Young comes into play...
I mean, just based on the success and the fact that they agreed to work together and they reached the levels they did in 77, mm-hmm. it does throw a little bit of question on Young's involvement in the bickering.
Sure, it could be. Yeah, I mean, there might be something to that. That's an interesting thought. Now, the another song that came from this that I didn't think wasn't released as a single, but is... at this point, another Graham Nash tune called Cathedral, where he talks about recounts a bad trip he had in Winchester Cathedral.
Today, seeing things so clear this way, in the car on my way to Stonehenge.
On LSD, which is really good. Now, this album actually, so it came out in 1977. Keep in mind some other albums that were huge at the same time. Hotel California, Rumors by Fleetwood Mac. And when you kind of put this album in that timeline, it's like, okay, yeah, this fits really well in there.
Yeah, that late 70s FM moderate mm-hmm. rock, songwriter focused kind of music was huge.
Right. Yeah, because you're getting a lot more electric guitar and synthesizer with Just a Song Before I Go, a lot of audio tricks mm-hmm. In that tune. And that turned out to be their highest charting single, which I didn't know. I thought Southern Cross might have done better, or I don't know, some of the other earlier tunes I thought would have done better, but Just a Song Before I Go came out first. And he actually talks a lot about that. I found this XMU recording interview with Graham Nash where he sings these songs, plays them acoustically, and talks about the histories behind or the stories behind them. And again, you know, Just a Song Before I Go came from a trip to the airport, and really interesting stories behind all those songs.
In 1978, they got their star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
which is cool. You know, you always think about it just being movie and TV stars, but yeah, seeing musicians. I mean, you know, Elvis crossed the line between or blurred the lines between musician and actor for his movie roles and got a Hollywood star on the Walk of Fame then. But them getting one is interesting.
Especially you know, after, especially after what, 3 albums and a live album and a compilation.
Now, was it just a Crosby, Stills and Nash star, or was it a Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young star?
I am unsure. I don't know if it says, I'm looking it up. I don't know if it says CSNY or if it says CSN.
Nope. It just says Crosby, Stills and Nash. There it is right there.
Wow. It's that must on have the really South pissed off Neil.
I don't know. You wonder because he's kind of giving his, walk in, walk out role and he can't really expect to be part of all the successes of the band if he's only there for half the time.
Okay. All right. But still, it's pretty impressive to get a star after
it is.
After 3 albums, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I mean, they're from that area, but south side of the 6600 block of Hollywood Boulevard, you can find the Crosby, Stills, and Nash star.
Someone go there with a soundography poker chip and take a picture with it. Not a sticker. Don't do sticker.
Don't vandalize it. Yeah, no vandals. No vandals. All right, so after CSN, the album called CSN, David Crosby's addition to Freebase Cocaine kind of slowed down the work that the band was doing.